Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Technology Leaders.
Well, this is an exciting show. We got a couple of people that are doing some major events here in town. We're going to lead off with Turner Smith. He is the chairman of the 2014 Health IT Leadership Summit. Welcome, Turner.
Hello. Good morning.
The Health IT Leadership Summit, you want to talk a little bit about what you guys are up to over there?
Absolutely. We're very excited about the Leadership Summit this year. This is the fifth year that we've been holding the Leadership Summit. It was founded originally by the Georgia Department of Economic Development, the Metro Atlanta Chamber, and the Technology Association of Georgia Health Society. Really is a forum to help promote the very vibrant health IT ecosystem that we have in Georgia, as well as provide a forum for industry leaders and thought leadership between educators, providers, and employers.
Now, can you talk a little bit about the health IT ecosystem that exists here? Do you know about how many companies we have in that space?
Absolutely. Georgia is frequently referred to as the health IT leadership capital of the nation. There are north of 225 IT companies in Georgia right now, and the top eight in the HCI 100 are driving north of $5 billion in revenue currently. So it's a big ecosystem.
So now, why do you think that Atlanta became the place for health IT?
Why did Atlanta become the place for health IT? I'm not sure why it became the place for health IT, but I'm certain that it is now the place for health IT.
So it just happened kind of accidentally? It wasn't done on purpose?
Well, I think it is being driven very deliberately right now by different organizations such as the Technology Association of Georgia, GDEC, and the Metro Chamber. To continue to promote all aspects of the ecosystem, small to large, as well as driving the education pipeline to provide the workforce for the future.
But the elements that make it an important cluster for here in town, it's the private companies. We have the CDCs here, you know, the international airport. These are all elements, the research capabilities of the universities. Are those all important components of it?
They absolutely are. And they're all critical components of, again, creating a self-sustaining ecosystem so that we're educating the workforce for the future through all of those educational components. You've got access to the airport and easy access to the area here, as well as just the volume of employers at 225 or north of that, both large and small.
So now, as the chairman of the summit, what was the hardest thing for you?
The hardest thing for me right now as the chairman of the summit is trying to outdo the last four summits. They've been tremendously successful, and we want to focus this year on the transformation of healthcare delivery as our theme. As we continue down the road with the ACA, and as we are really looking at trying to drive more consumer-centered care, is really how IT companies and how health IT is going to be leveraged to transform healthcare delivery to the point of care and to tailor it to consumer-driven healthcare.
And Turner, for the delegates that are coming to the summit, what would be your ideal outcomes for them attending? What would be the perfect scenario?
I think the perfect scenario for the attendees is that they come out energized about what they're doing and what they're creating with new and fresh ideas. Because at the end of the day, I think the rewarding part about being in healthcare is that you're helping people. And I think that's true for everybody, whether you're a provider or whether you are a manufacturer, whether you're an educator. At the end of the day, it's about improving lives. And so for me, the perfect outcome is that folks come out with a fresh set of eyes and ideas and energized by the conversations they've had. We try to use our featured speaker really to present a kind of what is possible, a 10 to 20 year outlook. What is possible in the realm of healthcare? What might it look like 20 years from now? And then drilling down with our executive panel and some other discussions to a midterm view, so kind of a 3 to 5 year look. What is my roadmap going to look like? If these are all the things that are possible, how do I build a roadmap to get us there? And then finally, with our content modules in the afternoon, really trying to get into the weeds a little bit more. If this is my roadmap, these are the things that are possible. What are some things that I can do today to push the ball down the field a little bit further?
And as an outsider, just looking at the healthcare industry in America, which is something I'm still trying to get my head around, do you find that that roadmap, that 5-year, 10-year roadmap, is actually very difficult to chart based on some of the political changes? Or actually does the community feel pretty comfortable that they feel IT-wise it's pretty much the same?
Well, it's an interesting question. I think I could tell you, so my background is a hospital administrator, and as a provider of care, due to all of the regulatory changes that have happened over the last 3 years even, it's increasingly difficult simply to keep up with compliance. So it's very hard sometimes to build a roadmap when the roadmap or the rules change, it seems like, almost every year, because then there's kind of constant modifications to a roadmap. You have a very hard time putting together a comprehensive strategic plan. For industry, however, it's a little bit different. So what I find, I think, is that while there are compliance issues that certainly have changed a lot, and there are reimbursement rules and a number of different moving parts, innovative technology in healthcare is still innovative technology in healthcare, regardless of what the regulatory environment looks like. And in that way, I think there's less of an impact, perhaps. So it's a little of both.
And do you think that those changes that you mentioned to regulation actually feed innovation, actually feed startups thinking, because of the changing nature of the environment, there is always an avenue, there is always something that I can do? Or do you think it potentially makes it more complex?
That's a tough question. My take on that is that it can do either. There are certainly some parts of the regulatory environment that I would say have stifled innovation. Things like the medical device tax, most recently the MDDS ruling by the FDA, which they incidentally reversed about 4 months ago, and I think reopens an innovation playing field, especially in the IT and software development areas. Places where – so it's a mixed bag in my opinion. There are places where it stifled innovation. There are also some places where I think it helps innovation.
So now at the summit, is there any speaker or education that you're particularly looking forward to?
I am particularly looking forward to our featured speaker this year. Jonathan Bush is the CEO at Athena Health. I've heard him speak before. He is a dynamic speaker, has volunteered a large amount of his time, and is very interested in doing Q&A, which I find particularly intriguing, because I think then there becomes a dialogue, not only a presentation and talking points, but a true dialogue that's generated. So I'm exceedingly happy and very excited about Jonathan Bush as our featured speaker this year.
Now, is the event sold out?
I don't know if we can say that it's sold out or not. We've been at the Fox Theater the last 4 years, and McKesson is our lead sponsor. And one of the challenges that was given to me last year was to try to double our membership, or double our attendance this year. And we're
– Just double it?
Double or triple it. I would like to triple it personally. But part of the way that we've done this is we have moved the venue from the Fox Theater, where we've been from the last 4 years, to the Renaissance Waverly, because we can simply accommodate a lot more attendees. Mm-hmm. So I think the last number I saw was we were a little bit north of 900, which is – it's probably a 40% increase for us right now, and we certainly expect a lot more registrations here in the next 2 weeks.
Now, who should attend?
Who should attend? I would say anybody that's a stakeholder in the health IT ecosystem, whether you're an educator, whether you're an employer, a provider, there's going to be something for everybody. And we really, again, as we were speaking about earlier, try to address all aspects of the ecosystem for health IT.
And this event, it's happened, you said, the last 5 years. And can you talk about how you've seen it grow over the last few years?
So as I have seen it grown over the last 5 years, I think I started as a board member for the Technology Association of Georgia Health Society, and I started volunteering I actually started, I was responsible for finding and recruiting our keynote speakers. And
so on the early, at the beginning of the summit, they said, "Hey, Turner, go get us a keynote speaker," right? And then there wasn't much, you didn't have a lot of a track record at that point, right?
We did not. And there was a lot of kind of scratching our head about, so who's appropriate? What do we want to do with this? How is all of this going to work? Are they going to come?
Right.
And why would they come? So that the interesting thing to me, if you frame it that way, and I think that's actually a great way to frame it, is that struggling to make the summit relevant and important early on. We knew it was important. We knew what we wanted to do with it, but being able to create that momentum so that 5 years down the line, I have no problem recruiting featured speakers. I have no problem recruiting, you know, really, really smart folks as our moderators and panelists. And everyone has really heard of the summit at this point. So there's not a big elevator pitch about, will you come speak with us or will you participate?
Is the summit primarily for Atlanta businesses or people coming from all over?
It started primarily with Atlanta and Georgia businesses. And one of the pushes that we've really tried to do this year is expanding the summit's footprint into the Southeast and making it a nationally relevant showcase for thought leadership to demonstrate nationally the thought leadership that comes out of the Atlanta, Georgia area.
Has that occurred? Have you been able to do that?
It has. So we have moderators coming down from D.C. this year. I think this is we had a couple folks coming in from out of town last year, but we have a significant number of our panelists and moderators, for instance, as well as pre-registered attendees that are coming in from out of town. We've got a block of rooms at the Waverly for attendees, and if we simply judge it on that rule of thumb, I would say that yes. So we are expanding, and we plan to continue to do that next year as well.
So now, if somebody wanted to learn more about the summit, is there a website?
There is, healthitleadership.org.
All right. Well, thank you so much for sharing your story.
Absolutely. Thank you.
All right. Next up, we have a good friend of Business Radio X, Mr. Sanjay Parekh, and he is with Startup Riot. Welcome, Sanjay.
Hey, thanks for having me on again.
Startup Riot took a little bit of a break last year.
A little bit of an unfortunate break, yeah.
But you were doing it, well, first, why don't you share a little bit, Startup Riot, when you created this, what were you thinking?
So
that wasn't meant like that.
What were you thinking?
In a good way. In a good way.
What was the idea? Let's say that.
So back in 2008, the idea was to help other entrepreneurs succeed, basically.
And then so kind of walk a person who isn't familiar through the event.
So the event centers around 30 entrepreneurs getting up on stage doing 3-minute, 4-slide presentations. We now do 3 minutes of Q&A as well with those presenters. We do 2 keynote speakers. At the end of the day, our 3 judges select the top 5 out of the 30, and then the audience picks the top 3 out of the 5, and then we do an after party. So fun, full, packed day.
And this started because of a bad speed dating experience for you?
Not at all. I guess it really started because of doing my own startup and just the challenges of getting out there and meeting the people that would help me succeed. So I figured once we exited the startup that I did, I might as well do something to help other entrepreneurs succeed.
And right off the bat, the startups love the event, right? I mean, you were getting a lot of startups participating.
Yeah, absolutely. So the first year, I think we had 54 startups. And it was funny because when I announced the event originally, people said, well, you know, I said I wanted 50. They said, well, you know, there's not even 50 startups in all of Atlanta. They were wrong. And we quickly stripped through 50. And then I was like, uh-oh, what do? I don't have enough time to get them all on stage. So we've kind of peeled back from that number just because we want to do the Q&A and everything else.
And then you expanded Startup Riot to Seattle.
We expanded to Seattle for 2 years, and we pulled back from that as well. Somewhat unfortunately, I think there's just some structural challenges there in Seattle. And obviously, too, being based in Atlanta, it's hard to do an event in a city that you're not in.
Right.
So, and for the attendees that come, and there's quite a few of these networking events in Atlanta, let alone in probably Boston and Seattle and other places.
Yeah.
When they come away from this event, what do you think that they're saying is so special?
So, yeah, I think the thing that is different is, so I'm really into this event and doing this event to help other entrepreneurs succeed. So there's a lot of little nuances to the event that don't exist in other events. One of them is that we actually screen all of the attendees. So all the, service providers, you know, lawyers, accountants, recruiters, consultants, anybody that sells stuff to entrepreneurs can't come to the event unless they're a sponsor. And I think part of what that does is it makes sure that every single person that you meet is there for a reason and it's somebody that you want to meet. And honestly, including the sponsors, because they get why we're doing it that way.
Now, the event itself is, we've seen it from by doing a remote at the event. We're interviewing the startup people. They get a table for themselves to demo their whatever their service or product is. And then they get to go on stage.
Yep.
Is that going to be the same format this year?
Same exact format. You know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Is it at the Tabernacle?
No, we are not at the Tabernacle anymore. That was one of the challenges and why we took a hiatus this year. So we're actually moving to a new venue. We're going to be at Terminal West over in King Plow. That was announced just last week. It's a little bit of a challenge for us because the space is not contiguous like it was at the Tabernacle. So we've got actually two different spaces. So we've got a gallery space where the demo pit's going to be and a remote viewing area. And then we've got the main concert hall. But this time we actually have a restaurant attached to the concert hall. So that's going to help with lunchtime. Mm-hmm. And then we're going to bring in, as we always do, a couple of food trucks.
And the event is going to be in March of next year?
March 4th, 2015, a Wednesday as always.
And it'll be 30... startups?
30 startups. Applications to present are open. Applications to attend are open. Talking to sponsors. Everything's full bore right now.
And how do you find the people that come, those 30 startups, are they always new to the event or are they sometimes people that would kind of do the same pitch 2 years in a row?
Yeah, we generally try not to get companies that come multiple times. We have had a few over the years that have done it. But, you know, to date now, I think we've had over 400 companies present. All told, if you look at the amount of money that they've either raised or exited for, it's over $660 million between that. So, you know, popular company or companies that are well known like Cabbage here in town, they're a big chunk of that because they've raised a lot of money. But we've had companies from all over. And so generally, they tend to be new companies and they also tend to be companies that are not local. So we've had as far away as Australia fly in to present at the event, and we've also had as far away as Ukraine fly in to attend the event.
Right. I remember the last time you did it, there was like a cluster from Chattanooga. There was like a, right? There was
Yeah. So I think because of Gig Tank and the incubator they've got going on there, they had it was almost like a train that came down from Chattanooga to here, which is great. That's awesome.
I love the story that I heard about. I think is it Pin Drop? There's a company that tells you where you're coming from. And it was so interesting that you were saying how they initially done three slides with pretty much clip art. That was the way that they expressed themselves.
So the name of the company was originally Telineage, which is also a horrible name. Which is why it's great that they changed it to Pindrop Security. So the first set of slides that I got from Vijay were atrocious. And I just kept pushing on him to get a graphic designer involved. And finally he relented and he did it. And he ended up placing second. He tied for second. And now I think they've raised, I don't know, $18, $20 million from Andreessen Horowitz. So great story, great company. I love what they're doing. And I'm just so glad that we were a part of that.
So can you do a little coaching for a startup that's considering participating? Like what do they need in order to, you know, successfully make it to the final 30?
No clip art.
So what's interesting is I actually don't mind the clip art in the application. So the application really centers around a bunch of questions, but the two most important things are a video and their slide deck. So they have to submit four slides like they would at the event and a three-minute video of them presenting. I think actually that's the most critical piece is that video, right? I even say it on there. It doesn't have to be super professionally produced or anything. A little webcam works. But none of this cutting in and out, you know, it's got to be one take. I see people trying to do super fancy stuff, and a lot of times that super fancy stuff is just trying to hide some of the blemishes. I don't mind the blemishes because we can coach them through all of that stuff, but really what it has to be is that they have to be able to tell a compelling story, or at least seem like they can tell a compelling story. If they can't just yet, we can get them there, but that's really the critical factor.
And part of this is that they will get coaching, right? You're not going to just throw them up on stage.
You're going to try
to help them be successful.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, if we're there to help them, it's not, you know, we don't want them to come there and get made fun of.
Right.
So we're going to do whatever we can. Sometimes we can't do everything. And, you know, sometimes we can only do a few things, but we will do whatever we can. And fortunately, we've got some great sponsors that are willing to coach as well.
So for someone listening who's incredibly good, they've got an amazing product they're just trying to launch, but they're petrified of talking. So they can do everything, they can code it, but they just don't want to talk. What would you do? Kind of help the viewer.
He has actors that he hires that do the pitch.
How do you get them to that point? Do you have an event beforehand? Is there like one-to-one coaching? Help someone who might love this idea if only they could get over the fear of talking.
Yeah, I mean, for folks like that, really, they just need to get out there and practice. I mean, there's so many organizations here in town. There's so many events that you can go to practice your pitch. I mean, there's a Friday event at Atlanta Tech Village. There are things like Startup Chicks if you're a woman. I mean, there's so many places that you can go and practice and just get in front of people, get in front of family, get in front of other people that don't know what you're doing, and ask them then, once you do your pitch, did it make sense? Do you understand what I do? And if they say no, then you need to hone your pitch. But really, I think that's what it all comes down to, is just practice, practice, practice.
Now, how have you seen the startup community evolve over the last 8-10 years?
It has gotten a lot better. You know, I get this question. You probably get this question too a lot of times. It has changed dramatically in the last 10 to 15 years, and dramatically in a good way, right? The space has expanded. There's a lot more people involved. I think it's a lot more well-known. It's still not at the level that I think it should be. I think we still have a lot of silos in this city. You know, we've got people that are doing music or film and they don't know anything about startups or news, and they don't know what's going on. So it's not to say that our work is done, but I will say that I think there's a lot of interesting stuff and there's a lot of great stories that come out of this city. And at least they're being told now, whereas before they weren't.
And if you look at the ecosystem, we were hearing a little bit before about just some of the things that are happening within healthcare. But if you looked at how we need to potentially compete with, you know, up north and the valley, what do you think Atlanta could become amazing at in terms of ecosystems for startups? Is there a particular industry that we think we could really lead in?
Yeah.
What's your thoughts?
Yeah, I think everybody tries to point to those things, and I think that's great. I think there are definitely clusters. Health IT is one. Security is another. FinTech is another. I mean, the fact that a 12-year-old Atlanta startup owns the New York Stock Exchange, I mean, that's kind of an awesome story.
Right.
And, you know, obviously the most, I think it's still the most well-funded Bitcoin startup is here in Atlanta, BitPay. So I think we've got a lot of clusters, but that's not to say that that needs to be the only things that come out of Atlanta. I think there are all kinds of things. I mean, my own startup did not fit in any one of these groupings, but still we were able to be here. We raised $12 million. We successfully exited. You know, just because you're not in one of those groupings doesn't mean you can't be successful.
Now, so what's next for you? Is just finishing up this? Do you have any other startups you're working on personally?
There's always something going on, right? Actually, this last summer I spent at Georgia Tech doing a program called Startup Summer.
You were taking a class?
I wasn't taking a class. I don't think I'm smart enough to get into tech anymore.
Okay, that is a lie. This gentleman is a Mensa.
So, they asked me to come and help kind of run the class as kind of a consultant. So this last summer, we took 8 undergrad teams from idea stage to launch startup. One of the teams actually was on Kickstarter and raised more money than they were planning. I think their target was $30,000. They raised $33,000 or $34,000. So we've got some great startups coming out of tech, and now Georgia Tech is kind of getting behind them. So I'm actually working with those folks as well, hopefully again. And we're going to be next summer taking 20 teams through the program and going from idea to launch startup. And by the way, Georgia Tech is putting money into each one of these teams, $15,000 per team.
Wow.
Mm. And
nice.
Not taking any equity. That's the kicker.
Man. Right?
Wow.
It's free money. When does that happen in life?
And they're all students?
They're all students. Undergrad's about to graduate or just recently graduated.
Mm-hmm.
So working on that. And then I've got a little side secret project of my own that maybe I'm going to talk about at some point.
Are you going to be one of the 30? You think you'll make it into one of the 30?
No. So Startup Ride is not about me. So I would never present up on stage. So it's all about everybody else.
And where do you see the Atlanta startup community in the next 5 years?
You know, I guess, as we talked about before, I guess one of the biggest challenges is capital. So, you know, it's a funny thing with entrepreneurs, right? We always look at like the next challenge. If we solve that challenge, there's going to be another the next right. challenge. I think we are going to get more and more awareness. Hopefully we'll get more and more investors flying in. We've already got a lot of great A-list, you know, Sand Hill Road investors here, Kleiner and Andreessen Horowitz and folks like that. Hopefully they'll start doing even more deals. They're already here with one deal. Hopefully they'll do more. I think we're going to start seeing some more clusters around town too, right? So we've got this Atlanta Tech Village cluster. We've got the Midtown cluster. We've got stuff going on in Alpharetta. We've got stuff going on in Gwinnett. I think we're going to see some more of that and then, you know, some more coalescing of that and these clusters get stronger.
Now, do you see that as one of the challenges is that because Atlanta is so spread out that you have an Alpharetta one, you have a Midtown one?
Or
you think that's a positive?
I think I'd rather view that as a positive. I rather view it as, you know, we're not in this one giant echo chamber. Maybe mm-hmm. we've got a bunch of little echo chambers.
Right.
And then when you cross over, you're like, oh, wait, we weren't thinking of it the right way. And I think that's a challenge in some other cities where it is a big giant echo chamber. And then you develop idiotic apps that nobody cares about outside of that echo chamber. So hopefully that doesn't happen here. And I'm not pointing fingers when I say idiotic apps and echo chambers, by the way.
And on that note, when you find that with the increased access to funding that we generally say is now there, you know, in the last crowdfunding kind of format, and then also the fact that to develop these apps, for example, is much, much cheaper than it was before.
Amazingly, yeah.
Do you find that the flood of ideas, I mean, obviously, Band of Coders, we help these people that come in with a napkin, with an idea, or perhaps just trying to take their apps to the next level. But there's a ton of ideas and there's a ton of people trying to push their particular app. Do you find that makes it harder for the good ones to rise to the surface or easier because obviously there's more access? What's your thoughts? Is it a benefit or a challenge?
Yeah, I think it opens up innovation. I think there's a lot of things that we can do now that just 10 years ago we couldn't do, just because of the cost of either capital or the cost of servers and technology was just so high that it wasn't cost effective to do some of these things. And so I think it's helping bubble up some of that. So I think some of what we see, that increase of the number of startups, is a function of the fact that there's more possibilities and that are more, you know, able to be done now than ever before.
But to try and attract serious investment, is it easier now, in your opinion, to attract that than it was perhaps 10 years ago? Or do you think it's harder? Because the fact is that these investors now are having, I don't know how many conversations a week, but far more than they ever used to.
Yeah.
Is that, therefore, if you've got a great idea, you have to wade through so much more noise to try and get heard? Or is it actually, you know, not quite that? Yeah. What do you think?
I think it depends on where you are. I think if you were in a place that was very crowded, like the Valley, I think it's harder to be heard just because there is so much more stuff. But I think in a place like Atlanta, I think it's a little bit, I think it's the same. I wouldn't say that it's easier. I think it's the same because you just have to work on your idea and get it to a point where people notice. And then when people do notice, it's pretty quick after that. Mm-hmm. I was having I was on a panel with one of the founders and CEOs of the CEO of BitPay. And I think he said that he talked to 20 or 30 investors before closing his round. I mean, that's phenomenal. Mm. As a point of comparison, when I raised my $10.5 million, I pitched to a little over 200 VCs over 10 months to close that round.
Oh, my.
So, you know, I'm not saying I'm the sharpest knife in the drawer, so it might be related to that, too. And I picked bad timing, too, right? We closed in July 2001.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think there's a lot more sophisticated investors as well that can quickly figure out if they want to be involved in something or not.
Right.
Now, Turner, is there a startup element to the Health IT Leadership Summit?
There is. We were talking about that before we were on the air today. One of the things that we really want to highlight is the access to capital in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. And we've got a startup pavilion this year. And so we've got a number of early stage companies that will be exhibiting their stuff. And we really wanted to highlight that and highlight that part of the ecosystem through the summit. And one of our afternoon modules is specifically around access to capital. So both to let investors know what is available here and introducing them to the unique startups that do exist here, as well as having the startups that are there be able to get some education or interface with some of the investors that will be talking about the best ways for health IT companies to get access to capital.
Now, you heard a minute ago, Sanjay mentioned a firm that used crowdfunding. Is there going to be a crowdfunding conversation in the summit?
Not a crowdfunding conversation per se, but I'm sure it's going to come up.
Mm-hmm. And Sanjay, are you seeing more crowdfunding things pop up, like more companies going the crowdfunding route?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's been an amazing number. Even here, right here in Atlanta, there's been so many that have raised million plus out of crowdfunding. I think that's great.
And that, are you seeing companies here because of the, isn't there a special law in Georgia regarding crowdfunding that's different than a lot of the other states?
Yeah. So the equity crowdfunding is definitely different too. We actually had one company move down from North Carolina, Ground Floor, that focuses on real estate crowdfunding. And they're making traction here. And it's a great idea. So if you're a non-accredited investor, you can invest in real estate loans, making 4, 6, 8, 12% interest on your money.
Now, that's an interesting conversation about funding, that there may not be the big name VCs here like there are in other parts of the country, but we do have these innovative ways to fund that kind of involves more people.
Right. Absolutely. The legislative environment absolutely helps.
And also, there's a plane. I mean, I'm assuming if you've got a good product and you can get a referral from maybe one person here, you can go on a plane to San Francisco or to where it is and have that conversation. Yeah. But here you can pay your developer something that might not be quite so exorbitant as it is in San Francisco, or certainly know that in 6 months' time, your developer will still be your developer. He won't have jumped to the next project that offered him a coffee.
Exactly. That's the point I was actually going to make when you were saying that, is that, first of all, you can find one. Yeah. And second of all, you can keep them.
Yeah.
I feels like it's so hard to do out in the valley. You see so many people jumping back and forth, and that's just something that I wouldn't want to have to worry about.
You've got enough things if you're a startup. You don't want that.
Exactly.
The guy building your code has just disappeared.
Exactly.
So, Sanjay, if somebody went to learn more about Startup Riot, the website?
StartupRiot.com.
And so you're looking for startups to submit their application, and you're also looking for sponsors, right?
And for attendees as well. We're looking for the triumvirate, everything.
That thing sells out every time, right?
It does. So last year we had a little north of 500 attendees at the event. It was a lot of fun. This year I suspect we'll be back in the 500 plus. My top line number is probably 650. We're probably never going to have more than that many people at the event, just because, it'll be busy and fun, but not so busy that you can't find the people you want to talk to.
That's right. All right. Well, thank you so much for being part of the show.
Thanks for having me.
All right. This is Lee Cantor for James Douglas at Band of Coders. We will see you all next time on Atlanta Technology Leaders.
Atlanta Technology Leaders is brought to you by Band of Coders. Band of Coders is a company of talented software developers who energize clients' projects and their development teams.